Hey everybody, and welcome to today's episode of The Truth About Dyslexia. In today's episode, I'm talking with an expert in APD, Auditory Processing Disorder. I got it the right way around. I'm really happy with myself. Now, every guest I ever have does not have a John Smith name. They've got a lovely, fun pronunciation name. So I'm going to try not to offend her and say Riet Schwarz. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's pretty awesome effort.
Yes, I'm very proud of myself. So Riet is a specialist. She's been working in the hearing, hearing industry, the hearing field for a very long time. And again, I'll get her to tell a bit of her story, but it's all been around auditory processing disorder. How does this work in with dyslexia, you're asking? So it's all about how the brain processes auditory information. And in a simple way of looking at it, is with neurodiversity, it's never as simple as you've just got one style of thing. It's all about having a different way of thinking. And when you've got dyslexia, ADHD, autism, you know, APD can be thrown in as a fun and exciting bonus. As we're all giggling away, as we all have to smile to make it work. So we're going to dive straight in. I'm going to stop trying to give a terrible example of what APD is. I'm going to ask the professional, but welcome to the show, Riet. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Stephen. It's exciting to be able to talk about this.
Oh, it's awesome. I'd love to hear a bit about your story. So how did you get into the world of hearing?
Sure. So I, as you probably can tell from my accent, wasn't born in New Zealand. I was born in South Africa. And I studied communication pathology. So I did a bachelor's in communication pathology, which kind of covers, you know, speech language therapy, audiology, a whole bunch of things. And then I did a master's degree in it as well, and kind of started going to, you know, narrow down my field a little bit more into more what the brain does with sound and how the brain works and how it processes things. So that's kind of where it started. So I've been an audiologist for 20 years, but I really kind of honed into APD or auditory processing a few years ago when my son was born and he was diagnosed with autism at the age of 2. And he wasn't speaking at that point in time. And we were going from, you know, one professional to the next professional. And it wasn't until I kind of one day sat in the waiting room and I thought, you know what, this is ridiculous. I can do something about this. You know, I can help with what I know. So I started working with him, and, you know, sort of literally the only way I could keep him in one spot was to keep him in the bathroom in the tub, because that was the only place where he would sit still for long enough. So we spent a long time in the bath every day working on how he heard sounds, and that's what eventually got him talking.
Wow.
And so then I thought, well, you know what, we need to be able to do this for other kids as well. So that's kind of where, you know, the things started working, and I started working more around APD and specializing myself more around it. As an audiologist, and most audiologists would say probably the same thing, is we do touch on APD, but it's a very sort of like specialized area. So you really have to delve into it if you want to get into it.
That's interesting. It's so intriguing around the autism connection. And
yeah,
this is the killer with neurodiversity, is it's so misunderstood of how it all works. And so, because as I say, I know people that are autistic but don't have any, I guess, obvious auditory challenges that I can see from the outside. But you definitely see the side of autism where it is really challenging. And yeah, I'd love to know, like, from your research, your understanding, that connection between the two, you know, is it kind of something that heightens things like autism and dyslexia? Does it kind of add like another dimension to it? Or do you find a lot of people that are completely, they may have APD but no other neurodiverse challenges? So how do you see it coming?
Yeah, Stephen, you're right. You do get different groups. You get the ones that are very much a purely just an APD group. And then you get the ones where it's so intermingled with so many other different things that it's a bit of an unbundling process. And what I often say to parents or adults that we work with is, if you really simplify communication difficulties, and I feel like things like dyslexia also falls under communication difficulties. Mm-hmm. If you really simplify it, then it's these three steps. Step one is, how does the information come in? Step two is, what does the brain do with the information? And step three is, how does it come out? Mm-hmm. So if you look at it in that way, so much of the information that we process to be able to speak and communicate is auditory. That if you can't process that, or you struggle to process sensory information, or you're anxious about the environment, or whatever it is that's kind of stopping you from like taking that receptive information in, then it's going to affect how it comes out. So oftentimes when we deal with kids or adults that are neurodiverse, you have to almost kind of break it down a bit and take it a few steps back and go like, okay, how's it coming in?
That's interesting, eh? I think it's a very good way to look at it. It really is as simple as those three steps. And, you know, what always, you know, as I say, I've learned a little bit more about this. And you do kind of think, when people have hearing difficulties, a lot of the time we think of the physical, something's wrong with my ear, pop a hearing aid in, Bob's your uncle and you're away. But yeah, so often it's more than that, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the whole sort of process from once the ear, you know, receives the sound to the point where you understand what you've heard and you can respond to it, there's basically four steps in that process. So step one is the detection of that sound, and that happens at the ear level. But step two, three, and four all happens in like the sort of auditory pathway or brain level. So step two is discrimination, three is identification, and then four is comprehension and retention. So all of those, if you think about it that way, only one step out of that whole process actually happens at the ear level.
Interesting.
Yeah, so oftentimes, and interestingly enough, there was an article released by the World Health Organization earlier this year that actually talks about the fact that we need to stop thinking about hearing loss as just a peripheral thing, you know, at the ear level. Hearing loss can be central, and meaning it can be in the brain as well. So what the classification for hearing loss should be well and truly more integrating what happens at the brain rather than just at the ear level.
Interesting. And that's the thing people don't realize, I think, is how the brain processes. The same with dyslexia, right? Dyslexia is all about how the brain is processing the information, you know, at a different level. So, you know, it's very similar. It's just a different kind of receptor, because we really don't talk heavily about the auditory side of the challenge, especially from the hearing piece in that transition of information. We're much more focused, I guess, on the symbolic, when you're reading something, how the eyes transmit that information into the brain, and in the process of how the brain processes. So it's very, very similar. We're just kind of more talking about the eyes and then the output and that side rather. Yeah, it's very interesting when you put it that way. And what have you, you know, from your understanding, if people are sitting there going, okay, I've been diagnosed with dyslexia, or I think I'm dyslexic, or ADHD, or we get a bunch of amazing neurodiverse people here, how might they discern that APD may be something they're struggling with? What are some of the kind of checklist criteria that you have?
Yeah, I think there's definitely probably the most common sort of like characteristics that we often see is that kind of, well, sensitivity to sound, and that kind of almost avoidance of group situations and social environments. And I'm sure you can immediately think, well, that comes with being neurodiverse, that comes with a whole lot of other things. But that's the thing, is it a chicken or the egg situation? Is it actually to do with the fact that from an auditory point of view, it's so hard for the brain to be able to kind of follow conversations when there's more than one person talking, or to be able to kind of like process all of that sound, and therefore it's become more of a social thing where you try and avoid those situations. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, so the characteristics often are very similar to what we would find with ADD or ADHD or autism, because it's the sort of struggles of being able to integrate information and talk to people and socially integrate yourself. So avoidance of certain places, avoidance of social situations, sensitivity to sound, probably the one that I find most important is misinterpretation of sound or misinterpretation of speech. You know, that's probably the key thing for us as well, is if people say, well, my child constantly says what, or they might walk away after I've asked them to do something specific and they come back with something completely random, or I ask them to go and do something and they come back 10 minutes later going, what did you want me to do? You know, it's just gone. Also being very distracted by other sounds and other noises and not being able to kind of isolate this information that you want to be listening to. So the kind of thing that we often see in classroom environments is probably kids being not able to focus on the teacher and being so distracted with what other classmates are doing or other kids are doing, or even noises from outside. And then that's when sometimes there can be a little bit of a misdiagnosis as well, because as you can imagine, if you're really struggling to follow what a teacher is saying, what are you going to do? You're going to get bored, and you're probably going to either, look out the window and wonder what people are doing outside, or what we often see as well is kids get, you know, they start creating their own entertainment because they're bored. So what would that look like if you don't think about it from an ABD point of view or from an auditory point of view? It might look like behavioral issues. It might look like attention deficit disorder, you know. So some symptoms for a lot of different things can be traced back to, as I said before, if you take it back a few steps and you take it back to how's that information coming in and what's the brain doing with it, that's kind of really what the easiest way of looking at it is.
Because it really is, like, I think it's a great way to look at it, the input. Because it all is, like, we're just very complicated robots, right? You know, made from not made from metal. We won't go too deep into that metaphor, or I'll get lost in it. But it's around the audio, the visual. It does get you thinking about how. And I'm not sure if you see this as well. Like, I see this with dyslexia. I see this with neurodiversity in general. A lot of the naming properties and the way things have been created all seem to have been created in silos.
Yeah.
You know, so they're all very much in a silo of their own. So they don't really talk well together. It's not like someone has come up and said, hey, let's create a way of looking at the world from these inputs, outputs, processing conversations, and reframe this to make it more logical. Instead, it feels like someone found dyslexia over here, ADHD over there, autism's in the corner. It's now become, do you know what I mean? It's crazy.
It is crazy because it all kind of comes together. You know, when I was saying before about those four steps of how we process sound, so step three is that what we call integration or identification, and that's actually where you require your brain to kind of go, right, I hear the sound of, for example, a tui bird. Can I see it? Can I sort of, is it around me? Do I know what it is? You know, so in that sort of little action that we talk about, which sounds really simple, you've actually really just gotten about four or five different parts of your brain to talk to each other and identify what that sound was, because you're looking at your visual information, you're looking at your spatial information, you're looking at all these different things to kind of go, right, so what I've heard was that, and therefore I can assume, or I know I can identify that correctly. But if you have that sort of like disconnect in different parts of the brain and that integration doesn't happen, and this is probably the one thing we see a lot with neurodiverse children, is it's almost like the brain has these individual compartments that completely function on their own and they just don't talk to each other.
Wow, that sounds about right. And it's kind of like, I definitely hear as well what you were saying around, you know, noise. Like, I remember being in a bar quite a while back now, but it was so loud it was like I just decided to shut down and wouldn't even try and talk, because I was like, there's no way I'm hearing this through the noise, and it just sounds painful. And so, you know, you walk out, and even as we do this interview, we're doing it in the afternoon, and I can even hear birds outside my window, which seem very remarkably loud at this time of day. And my brain is switching between you and those birds and trying to retain focus on yourself. But again, the birds are going. So, you know, you're hearing that mixture, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly it. So that what you just talked about there is like sound segregation. You're trying to sort of like segregate a sound and focus on that sound. So the fact that you kind of literally feel like your brain sort of switching between listening to the birds and listening to me is an actual auditory processing skill.
Yes. And that brings us on to the skill side, because it is when you're trying to solve this, once you've identified the challenges, the problems, the levels, you know, this is something that can be improved by working on it. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's probably one of the most important parts of my everyday is treatment of APD, because it is treatable. You can actually improve your auditory skills. It's no different than going to a physio or a speech therapist or somebody like that and actually improving your skills by, yeah, the neuroplasticity of the brain. So, yeah, sorry, you go.
And so that's how the, you know, and, you know, neuroplasticity, you know, if people don't understand that, it's about how the brain can change with work. It's no longer, you know, for the last however many years, thought of as a fixed device that you're stuck with, depending how you were born. It can be adjusted, just like a muscle can be adjusted at the gym. And so, you know, I from what you're saying, that makes a lot of sense. And so you can improve the processing. Are there other tips for people out there? Like Kel from Wales got in touch, and she was saying, you know, she's really struggling going back to work after COVID in an office, and how challenging it can be in very like the open plan world, you know, that exists today. You know, is there anything you would say to someone like that out there?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we see again with a lot of adults and kids that we work with is how anxiety has a significant effect on our auditory processing abilities. So the autonomic nervous system, you know, is what is responsible for our parasympathetic and sympathetic responses. So sympathetic response is our fight and flight reaction. So the fight and flight reaction, or the autonomic nervous system, is heavily reliant on sound to trigger it. So for the brain to know whether you are in danger or not, it heavily relies on what you hear to determine that. So this goes back, like, you know, when we were in the caves and a breaking leaf or twig was suggesting that there was a lion or a tiger or something that was going to eat you alive. So again, so, and there's a lot of research that actually backs up that the auditory system and the autonomic nervous system is such, it's got such a close relationship. So if you are in a little bit of an anxious state, your sense of sound or your, you know, ability to like pick up small sounds and things is really heightened. And then you create a little bit of a snowball effect, because if you're more heightened, you're more listening and you're more aware of sound around you, then you are sort of like more picking up things that you probably might not pick up before. And that means that you're getting just so much of an overload of information, which then makes you more anxious, and the two just kind of feeds off each other.
Yeah. And I can imagine it's kind of like, it's kind of like me listening to the birds, but in overdrive, right? Because there's 10, 12 sounds coming at you all at once, and you're trying to retain some level of attention when your autonomic nervous system is going, you know, why is Bob rustling that bit of paper over in the corner there? And someone's just opened the door. Who's that? Am I safe?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so you're constantly sort of like becoming, as I said, more heightened. Your senses become more heightened. And once you get into that autonomic state where you're in a bit more of, I wouldn't say complete survival mode, but you're a little bit more alert, you're a little bit more about, hey, I'm in a bit of a danger zone here, then your sort of higher processing or higher level functioning doesn't actually, that's not the focus for the brain. the focus is more on that, taking in the information to assess whether we are in danger or not.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's true, right? We're always, you know, listening for something and what's happening. And, you know, it's kind of like trying to, it's kind of like bypassing your logic senses in your brain to go straight to the alligator inside all of us who wants to just bite someone's head off if they're scared. So that makes a lot of sense. So in that position, what would you, you know, so she's in that zone and in the anxiety, that will probably, she may resonate with that to be one, which is good. How would you say to someone like that, what works for them? Is it just pop in some AirPods and headphones, or, you know, is it about making her boss aware of it? What would you say?
Yeah, I think there's probably talking to somebody about it is absolutely always a good idea. But we would normally, when we work with children and we're trying to reduce their anxiety around sound, we use a lot of music and we use a lot of sound to kind of almost like desensitize the system. So making you okay with listening to sounds and just being able to kind of like, you know, calming down that auditory system is the best thing to do. Oftentimes people say to us, oh, should I be wearing like noise cancelling headphones, or should I be wearing plugs or something like that that blocks out sound? And that's really the complete opposite of what you want to do. Because as soon as you shut yourself off from sound, the moment you take those earplugs off or out, then your brain is going like, oh my gosh, let's listen to everything we could possibly listen to now. And you're just going back to square one again, and probably actually worse. You're probably taking a couple of steps backwards as well.
Oh, that's priceless. That's exactly what I told her to do, was to put headphones on. So we'll reassess that. this is why you're on here, because we want better rest. And that makes pure sense, isn't it? It's kind of like, if you're having negative feelings, the answer to negative feelings is never to bottle them up, push them deep down inside, try and pretend they don't exist, and carry on with your life, because they always, all the problem always bubbles back up, right?
Yeah. So basically, it's kind of like trying to maybe sort of sit yourself or position yourself in an area of work, if it's possible, where it's reasonably quiet, and slowly reintroducing yourself to sound, or maybe having some sort of like music just slow, very quietly playing somewhere, not on headphones, because you don't want to deprive yourself of the sound around you, but just sort of trying in some way or form just to slowly, you know, expose yourself to it, and just taking it real like small step and small increments. There are actual programs and things like that available as well, you know, like there's actual like evidence-based programs that we use that is designed specifically for this. So there's more that can be done on a professional level, but for that kind of immediate, what can I do to help myself and how do I just reduce the anxiety around sounds, it's just a slow desensitization if possible.
That makes a lot of sense. And as I say, for anyone listening, I will, from Riette, I will grab any links she has to pop in the podcast notes so people can find anything about her and how she helps. Because I think, there is always a balance, right? Some people will want to just try some simple techniques. And again, just becoming aware of this stuff is so powerful. Like, I didn't have any awareness that, you know, of exactly what you're saying, is popping headphones on. There are some days where if I want to gain my focus, I definitely pop headphones on. Definitely if I'm tired, I will do that to block out sound of humans. Maybe I just don't want them to talk to me, you never know. But again, it is quite true. If it becomes too much of a habitual change, your brain kind of just goes, you know, thinks the world has changed around it, right? Doesn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, there is definitely, when we try and sort of help with the environments, we often look at the signal-to-noise ratio. And we often have these kind of conversations with teachers in classrooms where we say, right, how can you improve the signal? And signal being whatever that might be, what is the important signal for you? And how do you reduce the noise? And noise is different for different people. You know, I often say to people, what's noise to me is not necessarily noise to you. Because it all comes down to what I find annoying.
And words.
Yeah, that's the thing that you said before about that negative connection as well. So the moment you have a negative connection with a sound, that's becoming an annoying sound, and that invokes emotions. It invokes annoyance, it invokes anger, whatever it might end up being. So again, that limbic system and how our body reacts to sound is a really strong response.
That's so interesting. It's so interesting you say it, because I think for everyone listening, you know, APD, I presume, is a bit like, you know, dyslexia or ADHD, and the fact that everyone probably has some audio challenges, and it's only when it gets to a real certain level, it's probably deemed APD, kind of like ADHD. But like, as we're talking about this, we've got a poodle, and whenever we're getting close to home, the poodle will whine for about a good 60 to 90 seconds. Now, I've got a real negative connection to that sound, and it's like it's grating on me. Where my wife now, as of the other day, she is she doesn't have a problem with it. It doesn't bother her. She's gotten used to it, doesn't have any negative association with it. She knows that she sees the story behind it as the dog is just excited to get home. I see it as the dog is being murdered by, you know, a brutal axe, even though it's not happening. So my back goes up, everything goes in full, like I'm frustrated zone, where she's like, it doesn't bother me. And it's we've just got such a different response to that one sound.
Yeah. Yeah. So sound's really massive. I mean, if you think about things like if you listen to I often ask people these questions because we do quite a lot of workshops and stuff like that as well. And I'll often say to them, can you think of an example of when the hair on your arm will stand up? You know, think of something that makes you kind of have that kind of like raised, you know, hair on your arm. And so often I would probably go as far as saying like 3/4 of the time it's to do with something that's auditory. It might be a song, it might be a sound, it might be the sound of somebody's voice. It often is even something like, we often get this in workshops where people say like the haka, or if I listen to the national anthem, it really makes the hairs, you know, on my arm stand up. But it almost always comes down to sound. And I think that's what I'm trying to say, is that relationship that our whole body and our auditory system, autonomic system, limbic system have with sound is quite powerful. So that's why you can imagine having these anxious situations or whatever reactions to spaces and sounds. I mean, there's even things like there's conditions like hyperacusis or misophonia where people can't stand the sound of somebody chewing, or you know, can't stand the sound of somebody sniffing. You know, and these are such powerful reactions to sound that it actually completely disables people's day-to-day life.
That's my wife. She hates the sound of people chewing. Absolutely hates it. Can't stand it. Breaks her to a level of, you know, just it's probably one of her hated sounds. Like that's so interesting because it's so common. You know, a lot of this stuff is, you know, I would say is, you know, from what I've seen with neurodiversity and dyslexics, we're very good problem solvers, and we create these things we call old solutions. So as we're going up in life, we've had to become resilient because a lot of this wasn't probably diagnosed very well, and we've had to work out how do we get through this crazy thing called life. And it's probably very similar with APD, is that we've had these auditory challenges, but we've just worked out weird little solutions to keep ourselves safe. But it doesn't always mean it's the right solution or the long-term fix. And it's kind of like, it's kind of knowing that, hey, I've got a nail in my hand, it can be taken out. There is someone who knows how to take it out instead of just putting Dettol on it every day to make sure it doesn't get infected, right? A weird metaphor, but you get the point, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's so many coping strategies, and we see this all the time with people having developed these amazing coping strategies. And it's kind of sad, and I'm sure you sort of, you know, find this as well. You know, oftentimes children that are neurodiverse and children with APD specifically might not do that well at school. You know, academically they might struggle, or they might struggle with whatever it is, you know, what they're learning. But it has no correlation to their cognitive skills. Because if you think about the amazing coping strategies that these kids or adults have created, it's a real testament to their cognitive skills to bypass all of these difficulties that they have.
Well, maybe we need to come up with our own test, because I think you're dead right. Eh? It's kind of everything, all of the neurodiversity, it's all input, process, output. Input.
Right? Yeah.
The three, like ADHD is much more internal. It's more of kind of the executive function side of things, how that works. Whereas like dyslexia is more of the visual input. Or ADHD is the, you know, do you know what I mean? So like they all kind of fit part of it. And you know, it's crazy, right? How they're all separated. We kind of call it a cocktail. So like imagine you're having a cocktail. Some people will have pineapple juice. Some will have a lot of vodka in there. You know, everyone's a bit different, but you know, we're all still pretty drunk, right, at the end of it. So we're still wobbling around whatever we've got.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It does become, as I said, it's definitely like an unbundling process in a lot of times where you sort of say, well, and we often get asked these questions like, where do I start? You know, is it, should I get assessed for APD? Should I get assessed for ADD? You know, should I just kind of go at all of it at the same time? And it's a hard one, because I bet you if you go down every single avenue at the same time, you'll probably get a diagnosis for every single thing.
Mm.
So that's where that kind of analogy of like input, processing, output. Just start with input. Mm. How am I visually processing? How am I seeing? How am I hearing? How am I visually processing? How am I auditory processing things? And, you know, kind of work your way through that if you're trying to understand yourself and trying to figure these things out.
It's a great point. And again, it's trying to bring it back to that literal testing. And you know, it's also deciding as well where in your life is the biggest pain, right? It's where is it causing the biggest issues? You know, where is the challenge? Because, you know, we kind of, you know, my kind of take on it is the world focuses way too much on anxiety and depression. Now, a lot of people go, hey, what are you on? We're all anxious and depressed. But I see that as kind of like a fourth piece. It's the output of the processing, all of it, everything working together. When it's not working well,
yeah,
the outcome is anxiety or depression, because you can't get your brain to work, whatever the purpose. But the root of that, for a lot of us, not all, but a lot of us, has some root in the neurodiversity challenge of not understanding yourself, understanding how to manage and change, and having used all these kind of patches and coping mechanisms to hold ourselves together for so long.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I definitely see in the same way. I feel like anxiety and these sorts of things, it's kind of like this blanket that goes over everything. And it just really weighs us down. But if you just lift the blanket up underneath there, you can actually start unbundling things. You can actually sort of figure out, why do you have this blanket over everything?
Yeah. And life's a book. You know, the goal is to never get to the end of that book, or as take as long as possible to get to the end. But enjoy each chapter. So if you are going through this, you're listening to this podcast going, this sounds like me. Oh no, not another thing to add to my list of challenges, because hey, we've all had those moments. But it's trying to go, okay, what can I learn from this? Maybe my auditory processing is causing me some challenges. How can I rectify that? How could I look for some simple ways to improve that? And also saying, where does this affect me? You know, to me, I could just stop chewing around my wife. that can be a temporary fix. But, you know, there may be issues where it is really affecting someone at work, and they need to get that sorted because it is really causing pain. So it may be a bigger driver for them to go and get tested properly and find some of these skill solutions versus someone else. Like, is that how you'd kind of look at it?
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, we're very good at, going to a physio if we have a muscle problem. And addressing it and doing some basic exercises, things that you would probably think is really simple. And this is no different than your improving your auditory skills. The kind of exercises and the kind of things that we do is pretty simple, but you build on it. And actually just repackaging how the brain listens can make a huge difference to somebody's life in so many really different ways.
Wow, it's so interesting. And just probably one area just to finish on around autism, because, you know, I guess when you see, like, I've met autistic kids, and one of their biggest challenges is the auditory, the sound, you know, between speaking and listening is a huge challenge. So with, you know, if someone's out there and they've got a kid or a family member with autism and they're having real auditory challenges, would you suggest they went and sought someone around APD as being a big stepping stone?
Yeah, definitely. Massive. You in the beginning, you see that not all people with autism, for example, necessarily have an auditory difficulty, and you're absolutely right. But there is also a large number of children or individuals with autism that do have auditory difficulties. It is actually quite a big component of it. And we might not necessarily be able to fix everything, but if we can at least address this massive component, it can really help. There was a study done, I think it was in Scotland, around what is the information that a child, for example, in a classroom needs to process and what they have to deal with. And they said 70% of it was auditory. And if you think about just as an adult in your day-to-day life, you know, how much of the sensory information that you deal with is auditory. If you don't want to look at something, you just close your eyes or you look away, but you don't have that privilege with your ears. Your ears will always pick up everything all the time, even when you're sleeping.
Especially when they're this size, Riet. I've got a couple of satellites, one on each side of my head.
They do a good job.
They do the work. Yeah.
So it's so much auditory, and if that's hard to deal with, and if that's just part of the problem, if we can help make that big component better, wow, it makes a big difference.
And that makes so much sense. And it is about, you know, and one of the challenges I find with a lot of our listeners with dyslexia, and when I say our listeners, myself included, is we seek for this level of perfection where we find something wrong and the solution needs to be near on perfect. Mm-hmm. And right, it's about, you know, the next chapter could be solving your auditory challenges, or the next chapter could be solving another piece of the dyslexia puzzle for you, or whatever it is. But it isn't about, you know, you press a button, everything's perfect, life is done. It's actually about the experience and the journey, which continues to build your identity and who you are. And that's the fun, right? Is being better than the last day.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like I like how you say that, because it's exactly how we feel about it too, is you just sometimes have to just chew or bite off big chunks of the problem and just chew that and see how much you can get out of it, how much you can fix off that one chunk, rather than trying to like go at the whole thing, because neurodiversity is so complicated. And there's no one particular solution for the whole thing. You really just have to categorize it and, yeah, bite off smaller chunks. And auditory is a pretty decent area to address.
Yeah, that makes pure sense. No, thank you so much for your time, Riet. And as I say, we'll, on the bottom of this podcast, we'll pop links to Riet's work. I'll get her to send me some stuff through. They have a great checklist on their website at Bounce. That actually has a list of things that you can look out for. You're based in lovely New Zealand, but I think, you know, from last time I heard from one of your business partners, I believe he is looking at doing some online training around it. So we'll pop some links to that if you've got those as well, because some people may just want to dive in and start improving. Some may even know they've got APD and just want some help.
Yeah. I mean, we can definitely help with a lot of online work. So I've actually got our first one where we're starting to work with a young boy in Zimbabwe. Wow. Next week. So there's no boundary really anymore. And we can pretty much do it from anywhere in the world.
Fantastic. No, that's wonderful. Well, I'll pop those in the links. Is there anything, you know, from a neurodiversity perspective, you know, is there, you know, from your own experience and your own journey, is there anything you would tell the younger version of yourself now that you're where you are around neurodiversity? Is there anything you wish you'd known when you were younger that you'd tell yourself? Just to put you on the spot.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I often think about now is that I should have not been so hard on myself when I was growing up. You know, you always think that there's something wrong with you and that there's, you know, you're incapable of some things. And now looking back, I just think, wow, I should have just looked at it in a way, or if I could have looked at it in a way that I was just different. And the way I processed things was different and is still different. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's right or wrong. But if I could have understood that better, I would have been way less harsh on myself.
Oh, I love that. That's a fantastic way to finish. Thank you so much, Riet. As I say, links are in the footer of the podcast, wherever you're listening to it. Make sure you share this work. It helps a lot of people. And we'll be back soon.
Thank you.